then feigned dusting off her hands to symbolize her release from the electronic leash. They caught up throughout the drive, Katie admiring the view and Reese pointing out various landmarks as he drove through the property. He paused the cruiser at the crest of the hill above his cabin to give them a commanding view of the lake, then steered down the track toward it.
"Is this it?"
Katie asked.
"This is it."
"Wow, what a view!"
Reese pulled the truck sideways in front of the cabin, and Katie was out before he could make it around to open the passenger door for her. She stood in the dirt driveway, admiring the home.
"Incredible," she said as Reese led the way to the front door, holding it open and stepping aside with a welcoming wave across the threshold.
Katie stepped inside, taking in every detail. She walked to the center of the living room and looked upward to the vaulted ceiling. Reese stood silently just inside the door, waiting for a sign of approval.
"Well, what do you think?"
She looked almost teary-eyed as she faced him, her flushed face illuminating with a bright smile.
"It's beautiful, James. I love it."
"Can I get you something to drink? I have beer, wine, water. I can make coffee."
"I'd love a beer. It's past 5 on the East Coast."
"A woman after my own heart."
Reese pulled 2 bottles of Wheatfish, a local lager, from the refrigerator and popped the caps using a bottle breacher from the kitchen drawer. He handed one to Katie and raised his own in a toast.
"To new beginnings," she helped,
tapping the neck of his bottle with her own before taking a long pull without breaking eye contact. They walked through the French doors and out into the cabin's backyard, which essentially ran uninterrupted to Canada. Katie kicked off her boots and walked barefoot on the carpet of soft grass as Reese led her toward the water. The temperature was a perfect 71 degrees, and a cool breeze blew across the gin-clear lake, causing tiny waves to ripple softly against its bank. The lake's opposite shore was framed by mountains covered in towering emerald pines.
"High ground, an advantageous position," Reese found himself thinking.
"This place looks like a screensaver," Katie remarked.
"It really does, doesn't it?"
"I'm so happy to be here with you, James."
She turned to face him, looking up at him with a devilish grin.
"Now would be a good time to kiss the girl."
Reese didn't hesitate, leaning forward and taking her face in his hands. She wrapped her arms around his neck, drawing him back toward her and kissing him deeply. They both lost themselves completely in the moment. Reese finally pulled back. "Welcome to Montana." Chapter 28. Kumba Ranch, Flathead Valley, Montana. Katie showered while Reese began to prepare dinner. He would introduce her to the Hastings family soon, but tonight it was just the two of them. The guest cabin had come with a Traeger grill, and Reese had become very proficient in its use as he cooked his nightly meals lakeside, enjoying the age-old ritual of smoking wild game. With the smoker going out back, he worked diligently in the kitchen. He rubbed an elk tenderloin with a mixture of freshly chopped herbs and sliced the makings of a fresh salad, enjoying a glass of Tuck Bechstoffer's finest Pinot Noir as he prepared their meal. A stack of logs crackled in the large open fireplace, bathing the room in a flickering golden light. He heard the door open and looked up as Katie emerged. She was barefoot and her hair was down. She looked right at home in jeans and a flannel.
"It feels so great to be out of D.C.
"I'll bet," Reese smiled.
"Wine?"
"Absolutely."
Holding the glass by its stem, she swirled it twice. She held it up to the last light of the Montana evening and took a moment to enjoy its aroma before taking a sip.
"Is this a French Burgundy?"
she asked, puzzled.
"Actually, it's a Pinot Noir from the Sonoma coast. It's called Semper."
"I've always wanted to try that. I love the name. It isn't like any Pinot I've had before. It's tremendous."
"The winemaker hunts with Rafe on the property. He always comes equipped with a few cases of his favorites. I liberated tonight's selections from Jonathan Hastings' wine cellar."
"I knew those seal skills would come in handy. And what are you preparing to accompany such a splendid Vitis vinifera?"
"The Pinot goes with the chips and salsa. Reese smiled. For the main course of elk tenderloin, we'll switch it up.
Elk, is that what this is?
Katie asked, pointing to the mounted bull on the wall. It is. My dad shot that bull years ago.
Admittedly, I don't know much about hunting, though I did love the venison your dad would drop off as I was growing up.
How's your dad doing? Reese asked.
For someone his age, he couldn't be better. He retired from his medical practice and plays a lot of golf. I think he's driving my mother crazy.
Good for him.
Can I help?
Katie asked. Nope, I've got it handled. You just relax and enjoy your wine.
So did you catch this thing?
Catch it?
Catch it, kill it, whatever you're supposed to say.
Ha! Well, you can say kill or harvest. I typically like to use both, as harvest sounds too much like you are picking corn, and kill doesn't convey to people that you are actually eating the meat. I was a little busy last fall, so this comes from Rafe's freezer. The Hastings clan has enough venison in their combined freezers to feed a small army.
It looks really lean.
It is. It's also good for you, about as organic and free range as you can get. You hungry?
Starving.
Good. Let's toss it on the grill. Reese carried a platter outside, and Katie shivered as she watched him put the meat and sliced vegetables onto the charred steel grating. Gets cold here when the sun goes down, even in the summer, he said.
It's probably still 80 and humid in D.C.
Let's fix that, Reese said, walking a few steps toward a stack of firewood and picking up a propane tank with a hose attached along with a Bic lighter. He opened the valve on the tank, and the fuel began to flow from the tubular attachment at the end of the hose. He sparked the lighter, and a foot-long flame erupted from the nozzle. He picked up the propane tank in one hand and held the nozzle in the other, walking toward the stone fire ring that sat between the Adirondack chairs. The nozzle bathed the stack of split logs in fire, starting them ablaze almost instantly. He worked the flame back and forth until he was satisfied before closing the tank's valve.
What is that thing, a flamethrower?
Montana fire starter. Come get warm. They sat together, sipping wine as their dinner cooked nearby, staring into the open flames as the last light of day slipped away. Even with Katie by his side, Reese couldn't help but think that halfway around the world, teams of special operators were just returning to base after hitting a target. He knew the only time most would hear or think about them was if something went wrong and it was reported on the news. They'd be returning sweaty, dusty, possibly bloody. They'd turn over any enemy detainees to the proper authorities, top off magazines, replace batteries in IR lasers and flashlights, and get ready to do it all over again tomorrow. Those men and women on the front lines provided the blanket of freedom that allowed Reese and Katie to enjoy this evening by the lake. Reese would never forget that they were out there. Not long ago, he had been one of them. He'd never witness another sunset without thinking of them and sending a silent prayer their way. In response to Katie's questioning look, Reese glanced at his watch and jumped up to attend to the cooking. He flipped the tenderloin and took the vegetables off the fire to cool, standing vigil over the grill for the last few minutes that the elk needed to complete the outside sear. He probed the meat with his knuckle and, satisfied, pulled it from the fire. Let's go inside. Almost ready. As the meat rested, Katie found a candle in one of the kitchen drawers and placed it next to the bouquet that she'd put in a vase on the table. Reese added a light dressing to the salad and tossed it with two large forks, placing a portion on each of their plates. He flanked the salad with slices of grilled squash and zucchini and drizzled them with balsamic vinegar. Finally, he sliced the tenderloin into half-inch sections, inspecting the meat as he cut. The outside was charred, and the center was a warm, red, medium rare.
Perfect. This looks amazing. I didn't know you could cook.
I'll be out of recipes in 2 days. I didn't want to burden Rafe's family with feeding me, and there's obviously no restaurant nearby, so I've been doing a lot of grilling. I don't think I've ever turned the oven on.
Then grilling it is.
Are you ready for the next pairing? Reese asked as he set their plates on the rustic farm table.
You know I am. What has Jonathan Hastings's wine cellar produced for us next, this evening?
Reese held up the bottle next to a glass decanter. It's named for To Kill a Mockingbird.
One of my favorite novels of all time, Katie declared.
Mine too. Katie opened cupboards until she found what she was looking for.
For a wine especial as Mockingbird Blue, we need the right glass, she said, pulling two large Bordeaux glasses from the shelf.
Tuck, Beckstoffer's famed Cabernet, had been breathing in a decanter since Reese started preparing dinner. He gave them both a healthy pour as they sat down to eat. Cheers, Reese said, as they clinked glasses. Katie swirled the wine and held it to the candlelight, admiring its legs. She then closed her eyes and breathed in its aroma through her nose before taking her first sip.
What an elegant red, she noted. Great balance for such a full-bodied cab. How do you know so much about wines? My little secret is that I didn't start out to be a journalist.
Really?
I did 2 years in the viticulture and enology undergrad program at UC Davis.
I'll have to look both those words up next time I get cell service.
Let me help you. Viticulture refers to growing grapes, from the Latin word for vine, and enology is the science of winemaking.
What made you switch?
Honestly, Katie said, the war. My dad, your dad. I felt like this country had provided my family so much opportunity. Seeing those freedoms squandered and eroded by pandering career politicians while young men and women who stood up to volunteer to defend the nation kept coming home in caskets made me angry. When Ambassador Stevens, Sean Smith, and your friends Ty Woods and Glenn Doherty were killed in Benghazi, I knew I had to do something. Politicians left them to die. Politicians who would never be held accountable. So I transferred to English at Berkeley and then went to Columbia School of Journalism for my master's. That's where I started work on the Benghazi betrayal, she paused. Sorry to get so serious.
In vino veritas, Reese said, bringing the red wine to his lips.
In wine lies the truth. I knew I liked you, Mr. Reese.
What do you think of the elk?
It's delicious. I could eat this every night.
That's good, because it's about all we really have available, the former frogman said with a wink.
It's so peaceful, Reese. I can see why you came here.
This feels like home. I felt this way in Mozambique until they found me.
What did you think about when you were in Africa? Katie wondered aloud.
Ah, a lot of things, I guess. I went to Mozambique to die and ended up learning to live again. I found purpose out there, using my old skills to counter the poachers. I thought about my family, and I thought a lot about the people who had helped me in the U.S. after Lauren and Lucy were killed. I wondered if I'd put them in danger or if the government was going to figure out who had assisted and take legal action against them. Katie nodded and gazed into her glass. And, Reese continued, I thought about you.
You did?
That might have been the only thing that kept me alive. This sounds strange, but even though I thought I was dying, thinking of you gave me hope. Katie swallowed, her eyes misting over as she thought of all he'd been through.
I thought of you too, James. It drove me crazy, not knowing if you were dead or alive.
I'd been living for so long thinking I was a dead man, I didn't know how to live, believing I had a future.
And now?
And now I'm figuring out that future. Katie took a breath.
Well, this is certainly a good place to do it, she said, looking around the spacious lakefront cabin.
I think so, Reese confirmed.
Now on to more important topics, like if there is any more Mockingbird Blue? Katie asked, holding up her empty glass.
Katie moved to the living area as Reese refilled their glasses from the decanter in the kitchen. She sat on the couch, her legs pulled beneath her. Reese carefully handed her the wine before taking a seat, her knee lightly touching his thigh. They were both aware of the contact, and neither made an effort to move.
Are you going to go back to work for them?
She didn't have to specify whom she meant by them.
Possibly. I'm connected as a contractor right now. There's something I need to do, and they might be the only ones who can help.
Reese didn't offer more, and Katie didn't push, instead asking,
When you got quiet out by the fire, what were you thinking about?
Reese paused. What I always think about when the sun sets. That somewhere the enemy is out there, planning, getting ready to hit us again. And that there are a select few getting ready to take the fight to them. Do you feel guilty that you are not with them? She was extremely perceptive. From a woman's intuition or a journalist's savvy, Reese wasn't sure. Not really guilt. It's more like I feel a responsibility to keep fighting. She put her hand on his.
You're safe here, James. Take some time. I'm here to help.
They each took long sips of wine and stared into the fireplace. Reese broke the silence first. I don't know how safe it is. What happened in Odessa? It's not over.
Let me face it with you, James.
She was brave. Reese felt choked up as he remembered her black and blue face, blood trickling from her nose, neck wrapped in explosives, looking up at him with pure terror in her eyes.
Katie, I knew that debt cord wouldn't blow.
Katie's blue eyes connected with his of piercing brown.
I know.
They kissed one another breathlessly, each of their hands caressing, exploring. Katie rose without another word. Taking Reese by the hand, she pulled him to his feet and led him to the bedroom.
Chapter 29. St. Petersburg, Russia. Gray was living in his office, monitoring events in Montana as best he could without making direct contact with the team on the ground. Tanya, the female asset sent in from New York, was making her daily social media posts. These seemingly innocuous ramblings and photographs, mere cells in the entire biosphere of web traffic, were a direct signal to Gray that the ground team was on track. Since Reese's movements were never exact, especially given the holiday weekend, the team had moved into position and would remain in place until he appeared. As soon as the secondary team received word that Reese was down, they would move in on Rafe Hastings and finish the job. Accounting for daylight savings time, there was a 9-hour time difference between local time in Russia and Montana. 8 a.m. local at the target was 5 o'clock p.m. for Gray, which meant that late nights were part of the program. It was approaching 10 o'clock p.m. now, and he had been in the office for more than 14 hours. His freshly laundered dress shirt was wrinkled, his tie was loose, and his jacket was hanging in its usual spot on his office door. For Gray, the monotonous hours of waiting for a subject to move was nothing new, but given his personal connection to this target, that experience didn't make this wait easier. He grabbed a pint of good local vodka from his desk drawer and took a long pull before pouring a splash into the tea that Svetlana had delivered to him before she left for the evening. The target vehicle had moved on Thursday, making a stop at the airport in Kalispell, no doubt picking someone up for the weekend.
The reporter?
Maybe that explained why he hadn't left his cabin this morning, despite the late hour. Sooner or later, he would have to go to town, and when he did, the hit team would be waiting.
Chapter 30. Flathead Valley, Montana. Vitya stared at the screen of the tablet, trying to will the blinking light that represented the target vehicle to move. But there it sat in front of the lakefront cabin. He and his team had hiked to the high ground above the ambush site the previous afternoon, setting up camp 300 yards from the road in the dense forest. The GPS tracker would give him at least 30 minutes' notice that the target was on its way, which was plenty of time for them to set the trap. For now, they rested in shifts, fiddled with their weapons, ate salty, dehydrated meals out of plastic bags, and drank enough coffee to give them all atrial fibrillations. Vitya's team was tasked with killing James Reese. He was the primary target and would be eliminated first. Then the second team would kill Rafe Hastings. He walked down to the ambush position for the 20th time and surveyed the scene. The IED